Okay, good evening, everybody. I want to apologize in advance if my voice doesn't project so well. I'll do my best. A little bit of a change of pace. No sources tonight. I'll mention a couple of sources as I refer to them. And then if anybody's interested in seeing them inside, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. But I wanted to talk about a topic that you would hardly believe is the subject of halachic analysis, and that's charoses. You know, when you think about charoses, I think the last thing you think about is Gemara. I think that these are like antonyms in the Jewish tradition. And of course, everybody thinks about their own family recipes and perhaps competing recipes. Maybe it was a mother versus a mother-in-law. You know, all in good spirit, obviously, of an aunt or a grandmother. And the truth of the matter is that that's all true and that's all important and very much part of the spirit of what Pesach means to us. Charoses actually... is the subject of a great and fascinating discussion in halakhic sources, and actually I think speaks very much to the power of some of the ideas that we've been discussing over the course of this three-week series, starting, of course, with the idea of transmission and how important it is to transmit the idea of why it's important to maintain a heritage that has been preserved for centuries and millennia, God willing, for generations to come into the future, until literally, you know, the final redemption. And that's certainly what we spoke about last week, and then we talked about, of course, or 2 weeks ago rather, and last week we talked about the halach ma'anya and how it takes the symbol of matzah, which is lechem oni, and it forces us to look at that bread of degradation in a completely different way, because according to the Rambam's formulation of halach ma'an, it also tells the story of how we left Egypt in the most unexpected way, and how something that was a symbol of our degradation became, the course of a night, something that meant something completely different. So when we talk about charoses, we're going to see that there's something very powerful that connects to both of these themes, but that'll take us a moment to develop. So the Mishnah describes what goes on to the ka'ara, the Seder plate, and one of the items, according to the Chachamim, is the charoses. The charoses is just, according to the Chachamim, something which is there. And we don't know necessarily why it's there, and we'll talk about, according to the Gemara, what the charoses is doing. There's obviously no pasuk in the Chumash that says, when you have the matzah and the marah and the korban pesach, you should have charoses, so it seems a little bit surprising. The Mishnah, you know, states something called charoses, but obviously we need to analyze, you know, what exactly it represents and what exactly it reflects. Rabbi Lazar ben Tzadok, one of the other Tanaim, one of the scholars of the Mishnah, he says that charoses is in fact some kind of a mitzvah. And the Rambam's discussion, the Rambam says, Rabbi Lazar ben Tzadok, this is the Rambam's discussion when he was a teenager, he wrote a commentary to the entire Mishnah. He completed the work by time he was 18. Says, I've often commented in the past, that becomes increasingly depressing to me with each passing year, that he could have produced such a thing by the time he graduated high school. Maybe the secret is he didn't have to go to regular high school, I don't know. So the Rambam wrote a whole commentary on the Mishnah, and one of the things that he said is that we don't rule in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzadok, we don't. So there's no mitzvah of having charoses, but he says, if we did rule according to Rabbi Lezer ben Tzadok, who says it's a mitzvah of charoses, we would have a bracha over the charoses. And it would be Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kidshanu B'tzav B'tzivanu, now not Al Achilas Matzah or Al Achilas Maror, but Al Achilas Charoses. But he says it's a minority view, we don't rule in accordance with that view. Okay, so that's what he, you know, that's what he had to say when he was a teenager. But like, we were all teenagers, so we all had ideas in our adolescence that maybe, like, over time we developed and we said, like, maybe this isn't the right thing. So the Rambam was no different, you know. So when he wrote his magnum opus on Jewish law, as an adult, he seems to have reversed this position, because the Rambam there refers to charoses as a mitzvah midivrei sofrim. So that sounds like the Rambam is saying that there is a rabbinic mitzvah. It's not found in the Torah, but there's certainly a rabbinic mitzvah of having charoses on Pesach. So if that's true, as many of the commentaries note, including the Lecha Mishnah, one of the most famous commentaries in the Rambam seems to have changed his position. But what makes it even stranger is that nowhere does the Rambam record the idea that he wrote about when he was a teenager, that if it is a mitzvah, that one should indeed make a bracha over it. Bracha Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Yetzeinu Tzav Tzimanu Al Achilas Charoset. So not only is he changing his mind about, you know, who to be paskin, like whose view is normative, but he seems to be changing his mind about the bracha also. So again, you know, everybody's allowed to, you know, change their mind, certainly from the time that they were teenagers to the time that they're adults, but there's something clearly going on here. So to uncrack a little bit of this mystery that underlies this Rambam, we're going to have to do a little bit of work, a little bit of research, and hopefully by digging, we'll be able to come up with some kind of an idea. So let's discuss what it says in the Gemara. So the Gemara first wants to know, if the Chachamim think that there should be charoses at the Seder, but that it's not a mitzvah, so what's it doing there? So the Gemara suggests that it's mishum kafa. Kafa is a hard word to interpret, but most of the commentaries understand that what kafa means is that there's a very acerbic, almost an acrid taste that comes along with the maror, and as such, you need something to reduce some of the potency of the maror. So the charosis is there not to totally neutralize the maror, but let's say to mitigate it a little bit. So that's what the Gemara has to say about the view of the Chacham. Then, analyzing the view of Reb Lezer Reb Tzadok, the Gemara says, okay, and if you believe that charosis is in fact a mitzvah to have, so what's the mitzvah of charosis exactly? So the Gemara gives all kinds of different opinions. One opinion is that it's zecher l'tapuach. It's supposed to remind us of the orchards in which the Jewish women had to give birth, because as you recall, Paro was saying that all the Jewish boys that are born have to be thrown into the Nile, so the Jewish women didn't want to give birth in the normal places, so they would go outside. There's other views in the Gemara that says it's a reminder of the tevin, of the straw with which the Jewish people had to work, of course. And remember the whole story, that when Moshe first comes along, that's exactly what Paro does. He takes away the straw, so now the Jews have to produce the exact same quota of bricks, but they don't have the raw materials with which to work. The Bali HaTosos quote a Yerushalmi that say that the charoses is actually zecher l'dam. It's a reminder to us of the blood of the Jewish people that was spilled in the context of their enslavement in Egypt, and so on and so forth. And there are all kinds of different views in the Gemara about how exactly the charoses can reflect these things. For example, if it's supposed to remind us of straw, so maybe the composition of the charoses should have the kinds of things that look like straw in them. If it's supposed to remind us of the tit, of the mortar with which the Jewish people worked, so then it should have a more pasty feel. If it has, it's supposed to be reminded of blood, then it should be a little bit more of a liquid. In fact, when it doesn't coincide with Shabbos, since the Gemara says, tzarech l'smuche, first you have to make it thick, and then tzarech l'kahuye, you have to make it have like an acidic taste to it, and many people have the minhag, some people probably in this room have the minhag, of bringing the charoses to the Seder table and then pouring the wine in at the table. Many people have that minhag so that you can accomplish various forms of remembrances, you know, with the charoses. So again, it might just seem like a home recipe or a family tradition, but what the Gemara is trying to point out is that whatever goes into your charoses is indeed a reflection of different aspects of the story. So remember, last week we were talking about how different symbols of Pesach connote different things. So the maror obviously connotes the bitterness. That's what maror means. Vayimaru es chayehem avodah kasha, that our lives were made extremely difficult with the hard work. We talked about the Pesach being a symbol of God's compassion. Always adds a little bit of a dramatic effect. So the Pesach is a symbol of God's compassion on the Jewish people. Pesach either means, as we spoke about last week, chemla, which is compassion, or it means to pass over. It could mean both, that God passed over because he was compassionate. And we talked about the Pesach being sort of the opposite of a maror, a symbol of the redemptive moment. We talked about how matzah is really a dialectic. It's both. Matzah is both the bread of oppression, but it was also, we were, you know, redeemed so quickly, so that's what we talked about last week. So what is the charoses? So the charoses, in this case, is much more like matzah. It depends which of you in the Gemara you think is the point of emphasis. If the Yerushalmi is correct, then it's a remembrance of the blood, that it's zecher l'dam, then it's maybe even worse than maror, right? If it's zecher l'tapuach, if it's a reminder of the resilience and the perseverance of Jewish women to have babies and to go out into the fields, so that the Egyptians shouldn't know so then it's a symbol of defiance and perseverance and resilience, right? So it really depends, and maybe it's all of those things together. Maybe that's what makes the charoses a little bit different. So, be that as it may, let's get back now to the Rambam, and hopefully we'll be able to take a step. So just to review the question in the Rambam, if the Mishnah says that the view of the Chachamim is that we're supposed to have charoses, and we're supposed to have charoses just to neutralize the maror, then the charoses is really just a secondary or a tertiary item. It's not really that significant. If Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok is saying that it's a mitzvah to have charoses, and the Rambam said when he was an adolescent writing the Parish of Mishnayos that it's a mitzvah achila, that you have to eat the charoses, and it's obvious that it's a mitzvah achila because the bracha says, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvosa b'tzivanu, we've been commanded al achilas charoses. So that was the Rambam's position earlier in his life. Later in his life, we said the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, in his halachic work, Mishnah Torah, he says, it's a mitzvah midivrei sofrim, that it is a rabbinic mitzvah, and yet for whatever reason, the Rambam takes out the bracha of al achilas charoses. So very difficult to understand why exactly the Rambam would have reversed his position with respect to the charoses. So I wanted to suggest the following, and I'm rightly convinced that the Rav must have beat me to it. I don't think that it came up with this on my own. I just don't remember right now whether I ever saw it explicitly in his writing. But what appears to have happened for the Rambam is as follows. Over time, it would seem that the Rambam adjusted his view about what Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok meant when he said that charoses is a mitzvah. Remember, earlier in his life, he said it's a mitzvah like matzah is a mitzvah. Right? Matzah is a mitzvah to eat the matzah. Al achilas matzah. Like maror is a mitzvah. Al achilas maror. So earlier in his life, when he saw that in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok said it's a mitzvah, he assumed that it was a mitzvah in the sense of a mitzvah achila, something you have to eat, and therefore the Rambam said it must be that according to Rabbi Elazar, you actually have to make a bracha over the charoses. Later in his life, I think based on all of the different parts of the Gemara that we quoted, that the charoses reminds us of the mortar, that the charoses reminds us of the orchards, that the charoses reminds us of the straw. According to the Yerushalmi, the charoses reminds us of the blood. So the Rambam, he reimagined what Rabbi Elazar meant when he said that it was a mitzvah. And it would seem that the Rambam came to the conclusion that what Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok meant when he said that charoses is a mitzvah is not that it's a mitzvah sachila, it is not a mitzvah to eat the charoses, but it's a mitzvah to make the charoses. That sounds funny. You believe that it's a mitzvah to make the charoses, that explains why in the Mishnah Torah there's no bracha al achilas charoses, because that's the nature of it. What's the nature of charoses? That it tells a story. In fact, if you look in the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, he gives you the whole recipe for what he thinks should go into the charoses. Now, the Rambam is a great man in many ways, but Susie Fishbein, he was not. The Rambam doesn't give you recipes in general. Why is the Rambam giving you a recipe of charoses? Now again, it could have been that Mrs. Rambam or Mother Rambam, that this was his way of paying back a large debt and say, I'm going to put my mother's charoses recipe into the Mishnah Torah. It always seemed unlikely to me. So clearly the Rambam felt that the recipe was really important because the recipe tells the story, right? And in fact, all the Rambam says is umivio al hashulchan b'leile tzachem. So it's just there on Seder night to tell the story. So there's no special mitzvah of eating the charoses, but the mitzvah actually is to make the charoses, which again, in its composition, tells a story. If you make it very tasty, it's a reminder of the mortar. If you make it more liquidy, it's a reminder of the blood. If it's a very acidic taste, then it's a reminder of the orchards in which the Jewish women gave birth, etc., etc., depending on what your composition actually is. And it's there, of course, to tell the story. So because the Rambam reimagined what the nature of the mitzvah was, saying it's not a mitzvah sachila, it's not really a mitzvah to eat it, but it's a mitzvah, it's an intrinsic part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story, of course it didn't deserve its own bracha, and that's how we could really answer the Lechem Mishnah's question. So I think that's an important point in its own right. But what it takes us to, I think, an even more important place. So if this is the correct interpretation of the Rambam, then I think we come to like a very deep truth in life, which is that if the charoset in its recipe, in its composition, is meant to help us tell the story of different aspects of the Exodus, so then what we really have is something very fascinating. Thank you so much. We're just going to soldier through. So you have the following, I think, very deep insight on the part of the Rambam. And the truth is, I think that this is part of what Rabbi Gamliel himself had in mind when he said you have to mention the Pesach and the Matzah and the Maror, they all have to be there. As we talked about how Yachol Mi Bo Yom, maybe you could do the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim earlier, saying that it's not possible to do earlier. It has to be B'Shah She'esh Matzah Maror Yunachim Ufanecha. The only way you can tell the story is if you have certain props there. So as every good drama teacher knows, there's only so much that you can tell over in terms of words. That only gets you so far. But if you really want to tell a great story, what you need are props. You need to bring things in. Right? There's a reason they call it show and tell. Mm-hmm. Right? If you just had the tell and there was no show, right, your kindergarten teacher would tell you you'll have to go next week. Right? You're supposed to bring something in. And that's really what the charoset is. Because the story, as we know, is very complicated. There are different elements to the story. There's the part of the story that's our oppression. There's the part of the story that's our redemption. Here's the part of the story that's our resilience. There's the part of the story where things got worse before things got better. That's what the tevin, the straw, reminds us of. When the straw was taken away, we were really angry at Moshe and at Aaron for making things worse than they already were. So the charoset basically reminds us that sometimes all of these things really come together. So if Maror is bitterness, and Pesach is redemption, and Matzah maybe both, what the charoset does is it says, you know, life in real time is so much more complicated than that. It's not only bitter, and it's not only redemption. It's actually all of these things very much mixed together. And that's what the charoset, I think, is meant to represent. And every family, in its own right, certainly, surely has certain things that they can bring to the Seder table that tell their own family story. And I encourage always, on an annual basis, people to do that. You know, the charoset tells our own shared national story based on, you know, however you make it up, whatever your recipe is. But as we've spoken about so often over the last 2 weeks, the idea is b'chol dor b'dor omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu, that we've experienced the threats in every generation, and b'chol dor b'dor chayiv adam liros es atzmo, every generation people have to understand themselves as if they've left Egypt and experienced the oscillations, the vacillations, the vicissitudes of Jewish history since that point in time. So if you have things that help you tell the story of a previous generation or a generation before that, maybe it's actually a physical dish that was passed on. Maybe it's a different recipe besides the charoset. Maybe, as it is in my family, it's a special tune that the Haggadah is recited with. Whatever it is, these things become, just like the charoset, an intrinsic part of the process of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now for the Rambam, there's just one piece that we haven't covered yet. Now, this is not widely practiced, but the Rambam felt that every single thing that we ate during the Seder should actually be dipped in charoset. So starting with your karpas. So I think most people in this room probably have a tradition to dip whatever they use for karpas, it's a whole different story, into salt water. How many people here are salt water users? Okay, very good. That's certainly what I grew up with. My wife likes to make fun of me because I try to accommodate the view of the Rambam as well, so I also dip the karpas into the charoset. She thinks I'm just cheating because I like the charoset. But the truth is, I didn't like charoset that much, but I do like the Rambam very much. So the Rambam says, so the Rambam says, you should dip the karpas into the charoset, and you should dip the matzah into the charoset, and you should dip the maror into the charoset, and for sure, korach should be done with the charoset. So it's true that Rambam didn't feel
that there was any special or singular mitzvah sechila that came with the charoset. But the Rambam certainly felt that there was a reason to eat the charoset, and that every single specific item that we would have on El HaSeder, on Seder night, should actually be mixed with the charoset. Not too much, so as to completely neutralize the matzah or the maror, but everything should go with the charoset. The question is why? Like, if the Rambam said the mitzvah is to have it on the Seder table to tell the story, so why do we need to all of a sudden dip everything in? Yes?
You cry twice when you have the charoset. You cry a lot when you break the charoset. You cry when you eat the charoset. So this is the set. That's his idea.
Okay. So some people maybe cry. I don't know how many people really, you know, maybe more with the maror, but I never cried with the charoset. Yes, but it used to send. There's a famous thing that tells you yeshiva. I think you used to send around this vacuum pack charoset before Pesach. Maybe you cry if you ate that charoset. I don't think anybody ever tried it, so we'll have to go and that's nothing against the tells you yeshiva, but it was sort of that. I thought it wasn't a great idea for fundraising. What do I know? Okay, so in any event, I'm just suggesting, I'm going to make a supposition, that the Rambam had the following idea. There is no separate mitzvah sechila. Again, he retracted that position. And that's when he thought of it. He was 17 years old. You know, lots of people have ideas that they say that they move away from, but 17, he said, you know, all kinds of ideas. So the Rambam, you know, rejected, he retracted that idea. But the Rambam apparently, I think, still thought the following. See, every specific item that you have on Pesach plays a role. The karpas, for example, the Gemara says, the whole point of the karpas is to get the kids to ask, like, why in the world are you dipping vegetables right now? The point of the maror we understand, is to remind us of the bitterness. The point of the matzah we talked about is the matzah connotes both malachimoni, the oppression, and at the same time, how things, you know, turned around in an instant and we were taken out of Egypt so quickly. So I think that the Rambam is basically saying the following. By dipping every specific item into the charoset, what you're helping happen is you're taking each specific item and putting it into the context of the broader story. Because the charoset is the only item that comes onto the Seder table and the Seder plate which actually tells the entire story. Because let's review. The charoset has elements in it which are of pure subjugation, right? That's the idea of Yerushalmi, that it should have wine, zecher l'dam. Or the idea of the Bavli, that it should have be very pasty, be very thick composition, as a reminder of the mortar of our enslavement. But at the same time, it should have something that has an acidic taste to it to remind us of the resilience of the Jewish people. Zecher l'tapuah. It should have something about the straws in there to remind us about the things, as I say, got worse before they got better. So the charoset, because it's an admixture, specifically because it has so many different elements to it, the charoset helps if you're going to dip every specific item into it. It takes the maror and says, okay, the maror was bitterness, but it happened in the context of a much broader story. The matzah has its own symbolism. When you dip it into the charoset, it takes on a whole new meaning, and it's put into the context of the broader story. So you could say the charoset is kind of the glue that holds all the different themes of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim together. So this is obviously a specific story about the charoset, but in a broader sense, and I was just alluding to just a moment ago, I wanted to take this to open up a little bit of a discussion about how we could make good another slight change that the Rambam makes. I mentioned already the language of the Mishnah and the Mechilta of Chayiv Adam Liros et Asmo, that a person has to think of himself or herself as if he or she had left Egypt. But we know that the Rambam has a slight emendation to that text. I think this is where the charoset comes into the Rambam. The Rambam didn't say Chayiv Adam Liros et Asmo, that a person has to think of himself or herself as having left Egypt. The Rambam said a person has to outwardly show that one left Egypt. Chayav Adam leharos es atzmo ki ilu hu ba'atzmo yatza atzim yeshiva b'tayim. That one has to outwardly demonstrate this. If some of you have friends in the Syrian community, or in the Iraqi community, or in the Taimani, the Yemenite community, you know that their choreography is absolutely vivid. that they get up and they walk around the Seder table holding sacks. And they literally recreate a sense of being enslaved. And then they get up to liberation phases of the Haggadah. They have all kinds of dances and songs that they do. This is all a way of literally leharos es atzmo, to demonstrate things outwardly, that it shouldn't just be a kind of an internal conceptualization, but it has to be not liros, but leharos. Undoubtedly, that's why the Rambam said it was a mitzvah to bring the charoses leharos, to show, not just to tell the story, but as we spoke about before, to show the story. To return to our singular emphasis over the course of the last 3 weeks. What we all hope to do, and none of us can do this perfectly, and this all requires, my mother would say, a good deal of mazel is involved here. But what we really want to try to do is try to communicate a message to the next generation. And there's a Gemara in Masechta Megillah that always comes to mind. It's in a different context, but with your permission, I'll borrow it for these purposes. And it's a Gemara that certainly every rabbi and teacher should keep in mind at all times, and every preacher, every teacher, every rabbi. So the Gemara there says that the Jewish people had a more sincere tshuva, repentance, when Haman received the ring from Ahasuerus than they did if you aggregate all of the positive impact of the 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses of the Jewish people. We have 55 different prophets that appear throughout Tanakh. That if you add up all of their drashos and speeches and shiurim together, and you take the sum total of everything that they produced, the impact on the Jewish people was less than when Ahasuerus handed Haman over his ring so he could sign the edict that says that the Jewish people should be destroyed. In other words, you could say a lot of things from today until tomorrow. I'm not going to go that long. But the most important thing is something visceral, something tangible, something that people are able to see. Not liros, but laharos. The charoses is there because, perhaps more so than we can put into words, it tells a story of what it is that we went through. And for all of us, like I said before, perhaps you have some specific object in the family that's meaningful, but we all have to try as best as we can, for children, for grandchildren, to hopefully to transmit this message as best as we can to the next generation, not just to speak and tell a story in terms of words, but there has to be something tangible, something that we can show outwardly, something that the next generation can hopefully attach themselves to, whether it's an object, like I said, whether it's a tune, whatever it is that's going to tug on those heartstrings. So this, I think, is really what the charoses, the specific mitzvah that the charoses represents, is part of the Rambam's broader rubric of moving the discussion, liros, to laharos, to outwardly manifest it. And this, of course, requires some forethought, some preparation, and some creativity as well, to think about how one is going to try as best as possible to get this message across. And it depends a lot, the age of a person's children and grandchildren, what stage they are in their development, what's appropriate for them, how much we're able to appreciate. But remember, the single overarching theme is to give a strong sense of why this matters, why we want to propagate this generations into the future, like I said, until the final redemption of the Jewish people. And if that means taking some objects that aren't specifically prescribed, that aren't part of the Pesach, the Matzah, the Maror, or even the Charoses, then not only may we do that, but we must do that, because we have a responsibility to engage the next generation where it is. And that's not, like I say, only a matter of telling the story, but that's also a matter of showing. And the charoses, I think, was the rabbinic way of doing that. And of course, that has to maintain its place, but it should certainly not stop there. So hopefully over the course of the next, it's now less than 2 weeks, I don't want to give anybody anxiety, but hopefully over the course of the next amount of time, we can think about different ways that we can take out certain objects which are of significance and hopefully to propagate them forward to future generations. And then those things, will take on significance in their own right. And I just wanted to conclude by noting one thing. I know it seems like a lot of pressure, like what am I going to think of? And all of a sudden, is going to, you know, have such a big splash and such a big impact. So I just wanted to give a word of encouragement about this. Like a fine wine, which has stone wool on it, these things grow with time. So even if you think it seems a little bit corny to take out something of a new object in the first year, or the second year, or the third year, these things have a way of becoming their own traditions. And what seems like a, you know, some kind of a gap or whatever it is, you know, in you know, the early stages, and I'm saying, you know, people should do things that are deliberately, you know, not going to hit the mark. But very often, things that, if you can think back to years ago, you know, you were the new generation that was being, you know, you were attempted to be, you know, engaged and have your attention pulled, things that you might have thought of as silly, and now you think of them as extremely warm and nostalgic. That's a very natural transition that people go through. And so don't feel badly if, you know, you think that, okay, this is going to, you know, be corny or receive like a very mixed review, because what people will remember in the end is that you were making an effort and what you were trying to do. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Hopefully with time, then it becomes a kind of a tradition in its own right. So with that, I want to wish everybody success, not just in, like I say, telling the story, but if the mitzvah charoses, as the Rambam eventually realized, isn't the din in achilas charoses. It's not about consuming it, but the din in tzipor yisias yitzrayim, and it really reflects is the mitzvah of showing, not just telling, and showing the story in all of its complexity. Hence, the Rambam's including all the ingredients in the recipe. It's each different ingredient told a different aspect of the story, and hopefully we'll all be successful in our own way. Not that we're going to, you know, get everything all at once, but we'll all be successful to varying degrees in making sure that those who are with us at the Seder appreciate why this is important to us, why we cherish what we've received from previous generations, and why it's our most fervent hope that future generations, whether it seems the case now or hopefully planting seeds for the future, will wish to continue on with these traditions going forward into the future. Remember that Gemara Megillah, there's a limit to what words can do. All of the prophets and the prophetesses of Israel tried their best. Some of them spoke very beautifully. Yeshayahu HaNavi spoke with such poetry. But there was a limit to what you can achieve in words. You take an object that means something to you, meant something to your father, something to your grandmother, even to a previous generation, and you show that to your children and to your grandchildren, and you tell a story of how this fits in, you know, hopefully that helps in terms of hitting the mark. And even if it doesn't seem like it helps now, remember that it's easy for young people to be cynical, but the cynicism of youth very often transforms into the nostalgia of a more mature period in life, and then it too takes on its own significance. And al titayesh min ha'poranut, don't give up if it doesn't seem like it's hitting its mark now, because it could very well be the case that years in the future, maybe even in a future that, you know, we won't necessarily see, but in the future, that all of those attempts will become what they were meant as, an attempt to present all of our most deeply felt sentiments about the significance of our Masorah, significance of our tradition, and why it is that we so very much want that to be continued for decades to come while we're here, and for generations to come after. We'll have to enjoy the generations that came before us, going back to the generation that left Egypt itself.
What do you have in Karaz to remind you of the story?
Okay, so Leo asked a very good question. Just when the Gemara talks about how the Karosis is supposed to remind you of the straw, so what did the Gemara have in mind? So when we have spices, we get the spices that are ground up. But if you actually had a long stick of cinnamon or things like that, so those were the things that in times of the Gemara they would put into their Karosis, because it actually looked like a piece of straw that you might actually then grind up and put in. So that's something that went into the Karosis. Eva.
This basic recipe,
absolutely. So this is the Rambam's recipe. I'll read it to you. The Rambam, again, I'm going to assume that the Rambam got this maybe in part based on the Gemara, but it could have been also his mom's. Okay.
So here we go. Hacharoses mitzvah midivrei sofrim. The charoses is a rabbinic commandment, really an extension of the Torah commandment of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Zecher letit as a commemoration of the mortar shahayu ovdin bo mitzrayim. V'keitzad osin osa. So how do you make this charoses? Lokhim tmarim. You take dates, ogrogros, or figs, otzimukin, or raisins, v'chayotze lehen, v'dorsin osan, and you crush them up to make the paste, right? So a fig paste, or a date paste, or a raisin paste, as it were. V'nosin l'sochan chometz, and you pour in vinegar, okay? Umitavlin osan, betavlin, and you take, not again, ground spices, but long spices, like we were talking about before, sticks, kemotit b'teven, so that the impact is that it's like straw in mortar, because the mortar comes from the dates, the figs, the raisins that you crushed up, very pasty, and then you have the sticks of spices that go in, so it looks like tit b'teven, straw that's mixed in with mortar, and you bring it again onto the table on Pesach. It doesn't say anything about a mitzvah to eat it, which is where we came up with our whole development of the Rambam's transformation in Ezra Charos. That's his recipe. But you don't necessarily have to, like I say, follow that, because the Baalei HaTosfos had their own recipe. They say that you should put in a lot of the different fruits that the Jewish people are compared to during Shir HaShirim, where we talk about El Ginas Egoz Yerati. Now some of this gets into questions of kidney, so you have to be a little bit careful about, you know, what you might get into, because there are different traditions about that. But the bottom line is that everybody should realize that the recipe is in the recipe. The recipe is, of course, a proxy for the different aspects of the story for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So hopefully the important thing is maybe when you make the charoses, somebody's there to make it with you. So then, you know, you say, this is why this goes in, it corresponds to that aspect of the story. And then, of course, when you bring it onto this Seder table, so then, of course, that story should be retold. And like I say, you know, that should just be the beginning of the props. Then you can bring out other things that are meaningful to the family as well. And, you know, you tell their story, and hopefully you pass that on from generation to generation. So that was the Rambam version. Yes?
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
And then it's, for example, when you make the five books,
the Megillah, that's found, let's say, in the Mishnah, which is from the second.
the same way that a newspaper is an exchange of a newspaper, so that's a compilation of many different articles, right? And there are many different sections, so it's like a sports section, the business section, and the finance section, right? So the Haggadah is a compilation of many different types of texts. So there's a section from the Bible, there's a section from the Mishnah, there's a section from something called the Midrash. So it's a compilation of different sections, different types of texts.
And the other thing was is that Moshe, not mentioned.
Right, right, that's true. That's a very, very important question. So it's a very good observation on your part. Now, the truth is in our standard edition of the Haggadah, Moshe is mentioned once, because we cite this, this gets back to your other very good question, which is that we do cite from the Bible in the Haggadah, and we cite a section just before the splitting of the sea, where it says Jewish people believed in God and in his servant Moshe. So Moshe is mentioned once in the context of being God's human emissary. Interestingly enough, Maimonides omitted that text from his version of Haggadah, because you see there's something that there's something in the text. And the reason would appear to be that the Haggadah seeks to tell the story of the Jewish people's direct relationship with God. It seeks to tell that story. And there was a great concern that by injecting the role that, that Moses had, that it would detract from that sense of a direct connection that we had with God. In fact, there's a very important section of the Haggadah where God says, it was I and not an angel. It was I and not a fire angel. It was I and not my messenger, not my agent, meaning not Moses. And the reason that this is so important is because throughout the biblical text, the five books that you were discussing, the Jewish people repeatedly make this error of believing that in fact it was Moses who took them out of Egypt. And sometimes they give him too much credit, and more often they give him all the blame. And they say, you know, why did you take us out of Egypt? Now we're thirsty. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Now we're hungry. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Now we have to travel around all the time. So it's actually a mistake that was made throughout the five books that the Jewish people never understood.
There's any place where Moshe is mentioned in Egypt.
There's one place in our standard text where Moshe is mentioned, but in Maimonides' text, he's not mentioned at all. Well, I was trying to explain the reason, but you know, you might disagree with my interpretation. Yeah. Okay. Everybody else.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know the thread from this great Pennsylvania Dutch.
Oh, you
I was there. I don't know.
My parents and my husband always told the story, and now our whole family and that whole the whole Holocaust
everybody's,
piece every year. So
that should be
we not
integrated.
Only came out of there out of Egypt, but we came out of Germany. Yeah,
yes.
But that was standard operating procedure.
Yeah, and like I was saying, if there are objects that speak to that, that's very important.
Yeah.
And one family that I always with them one day of Passover, they say, you know, important family in Tunic. They don't feel Exodus without me around the table.
I believe that.
I believe that.
I believe that.
Because if I want
have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully everybody's asleep.
Hopefully everybody's asleep.
Yeah.
That would be good too.
Yeah.
I just
thought I could get it for well. That's all good. His name is actually Colbert, right? It's like, is it Colbert thing for real? Or that's like a
hit? That's the only way I've ever heard it pronounced.
Okay. Because I thought he was, like a gag that he's, really fresh, right?
No, I don't know. It's the only way I've ever heard his name pronounced. Okay. So I don't know. And I, years ago when he was on, he had his other,
Report.
We didn't watch that. We didn't start watching until a couple of years ago. You know when we really started watching? We really started watching because of the attacks on Trump. That was really,
Well, this has been a boon for all late night shows.
Absolutely. And I think that Robin and I got a kick out of his synopsis. This is how we got our news.
Well, I think Saturday. I've made a whole big comeback as a result.
Right, absolutely. So we, and so
I don't know what
they're
going to do.
Interviewed
when he was getting this new position, when he was going from cable to to network TV, and they asked him about this, and he wouldn't give an answer.
Oh, really?
I thought he was doing it as a gag.
That's interesting. I always look for him. We used to go to the movies all the time in Montclair. I'd always be looking for him. So that's where he lives.
Oh.
We've never seen him. But he does things for the community. We've never seen him.
He's
used to look
for
him all the time.
Well,
yes, I think so. And so that if Trump leaves office and he has no more content, he'll be okay.
At this point, I would say it's probably
true. I think that
he's
right. We wanted to try and get tickets to watch this, to go to see his show, and we never did. So.
But sometimes, actually, it's a sad thing.
Good.